So my favorite Rate My Professor thing was this guy who's like, she is the worst. She will read every word you write, every single word. Do not take her. And I like put that in my syllabus. I was like, this is the best thing anyone's ever said about me.
Welcome to this week of the OTL, Online Teaching and Learning Podcast. This week I had a conversation with Natalie Chenault-Dougal, an educator who has taught online courses for over 12 years at every type of college, including Citrus College, Azusa Pacific University, and the University of Phoenix. She now works as a trainer at Macmillan Learning. Natalie and I talked for almost an entire hour, and it made me super sad to cut out pieces of our conversation, but I hope you enjoy hearing her take on why she chose to teach online, how an online teacher can make meaningful connections with students, and what the state of online ed will look like 12 years from now. Natalie's story struck me because we hear often about how online classes can be an option for non-traditional students, and Natalie herself was a non-traditional student. She told me about how that experience contributed to her decision to pursue teaching online at the college level.
I was suspended, and then I was expelled, and then with my parents' blessing, I withdrew from public education altogether and was homeschooled. Nothing was happening.
Oh, no.
Just like everything with the family went chaotic. Formal education stopped at 15. But then when I was 16, I was like, I'm going to go to PCC. So I started going to PCC. And I met all these really great professors who were just super encouraging. And they met me where I was at. And obviously, I was just this little kind of spazzy. And like, these people were so kind to me and saw me who I was and just like encouraged me and helped me. I was like, this is what I want to do. I want to do for other people what these people are doing for me. So I was like, this is my like life plan. I'm going to get my master's and then I'm going to come back and teach at community college.
So Natalie got the dream job teaching at a community college, which is where she had kind of found her own academic home as a student. But as you may know, the state of adjunct teaching is not great. Natalie describes herself as a disabled woman, and she told me about what it was like dealing with that reality in what sounds like a pretty hostile work environment, and how that hostile work environment led to her looking into teaching online.
But I was an adjunct everywhere. I never got a full-time position. It was just like clear 2 years in, it's like, oh no, that's not gonna happen for you, honey. Like, no, you know, I wasn't in the right skin suit. That kind of thing, not in the right gender, not in the right, you know, not being disabled thing. Then I started working at Citrus College. I've been teaching at Citrus starting in 2004, and then in 2005, one of my friends who was also on the adjunct slog, she's like, I'm teaching for the University of Phoenix. Are you interested? And it was, you would teach these 6 week long classes, and you'd be paid like $1,200 for it. And it would take so much time because you'd have to do everything through Outlook. So I taught for the University of Phoenix for a bunch of years. I stopped teaching because of my dean, honestly. I had a baby. I came back to work 6 weeks after having my kid. Fun. And he stops me in the halls and he goes, so, when are you going to quit teaching? And I go, I'm not planning to. He goes, you should do what my wife did. She homeschools our kids. And I'm like, my baby's 6 weeks old. She doesn't need any homeschooling. And I didn't really know about this being a pattern, but it was a pattern. He was forced to resign. I was losing hair. I was losing sleep. I was just a mess. And I'm like, I don't make any money. You know, like I've been teaching at Citrus for 12 years by the end. And I was making $12,000 a year.
After 12 years
between
of working.
12 and 20, like depending on how many classes I would teach. But really for each class that you teach, you'd make about $1,400. You know, you're not even making $100 a week. Once I figured out my hourly pay and I cried and I was like, I can't do this anymore because I'm making $2 an hour by the end. Anyway, so that's when I stopped teaching and then I got this job, which I love. It pays me fairly.
Yay.
It has health insurance.
Yay.
Now I work with Macmillan. So I work with iClicker and I just work with instructors to make sure that they're using like active learning pedagogical concepts to bring in the tech. So,
that's
did I answer your question?
Yes, you did. Can you tell me about your students when you were teaching an online course? What kind of students would take your class?
For online classes, I would say this is pretty across the board, whether you were at a for-profit or community college or anything. Tons of military folks, tons and tons and tons of military folks. Disabled people, which I use identity first language. You know, I got yelled at by a guy. It was Friday, and he said something about my son has a disability, and I said, we were talking about ADA accommodations. They're like, oh, I'm super sensitive to that because I'm disabled too. And he goes, no, you're not disabled. You shouldn't talk that way about yourself. And I think I can decide how I want to talk about my own body.
Yeah.
And he actually wrote me an email later. It was like, I'm really sorry about that. And I was, anyway, lots of disabled students, lots of working parents. Like, I had transitioning students was actually a really common thing. So I had a lot of students who'd be like, okay, it says Becky, but I'm actually Charles. So, like, how do we do this? And, like, I'd figure out how to, like, make sure that they presented in the online classroom the way they wanted. I had a lot of people who liked the idea of going to college, but didn't actually want to go to college. It's like how most people don't actually want to write, they want to have written. Like, one of my writing mentors told me that, and I was like, oh, ow, that hurt.
A lot of non-traditional students like you.
Yes, a ton, which is like perfect, because I would come in this like package and people would be like, oh, nerd who's had it easy. And I'd be like, well, yeah, I've had it easy in some pretty significant ways, but also like, listen, I know where you're coming from. I know what it's like not to have a family that's academically supportive. You know, I know what it's like not to have any money. Like, I know what it's like to eat one Snickers a day for weeks and then have everybody be like, you look great. Be like, yeah, it's the poverty diet. It's fabulous. Are you thinking of going into teaching? Am I terrifying you?
No.
Well, yeah, because you want to teach online, right?
Well, I'm going to teach middle school for the next couple years, but
that's
options.
My dream job.
Yeah?
Yeah, community
college.
Wow,
you are a weirdo.
I know. I love middle schoolers. So I worked with junior hires. I love them because all they want to be seen is as a human being. You know, and they just want you to, like, see them and, like, really see them and see them as a person and not bundle of hormones or a problem or cute or whatever. Just, like, see them as a person, and they're just like, I love you and I'll do anything for you.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh, I love junior hires.
That's so
exciting. Awesome.
Cool. Yeah. No, I've never heard that before. That's, and then coming from, like, an online teacher, they just want to be seen. Wow.
How do I do that?
How do you do that? That was one of my next questions, but I guess we could just do it now. How do you create meaningful interactions with your students online?
Oh, it's really hard. It's really hard. But people who sign up for online colleges are often have the same behaviors that general people do on the internet. And I don't know if you've heard of this principle, but it's something like 10% of the people that are online are active, meaning they post, they put up pictures, they're creating stuff. Then you have like 2% of that 10% who are real creators. And they're going to make podcasts, and they're going to make videos, and they're going to, you know, they're going to put together the toast or whatever. You know, they're going to make all these different sorts of things. And the remaining 90% are observers. One of the things that I would do is I would post a lot of videos of myself explaining things. And I found that was really, really helpful because then I wasn't just words on a screen. I was a person. And they could see that I was kind of a spaz. And so I did a lot of videos. And then one of the things that I would just do all the time is I would just email my students constantly. One of the things I would do is I'd be like, everybody send me your thesis statements through email tonight. I just want to look at them. So it was a one-sentence email, so I really lowered the bar to open the communication. And then I would just ask them simple questions. And I would always do it from my phone, because if I did from my computer, I overwhelmed them. Instead, it would be like, okay, my thesis statement is this essay is about performance-enhancing drugs in sports. And I'd be like, okay, I know your topic. Great, we know your topic. What position are you taking? And they'd come back and they'd be like, well, my position is I'm writing this paper about sport. And I'd be like, okay, but do you think they're good or bad? And we would just kind of go back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And doing that was really great because once we'd had one back and forth that was really good, the student realized, oh, she wants me to talk to her. Because there's this whole thing, too, where students assume that their professors actually don't really want any connection with them. And the sad thing is, you know that's true. You know, there are professors who are like, nope. But there's a lot of us, and I think it's there are more people like me, like, you know, you're doing it because you think it's good, and you think it's helpful, and you think it's the right thing to do. And so, you know, there's this feeling like, no, I'm an irritation to them, and I'm like, you're my whole life. You're not my irritation, you're my whole life. So, like, a lot of things about the online classroom that you have to do is you have to build a classroom with a lot of warmth. You have to build a classroom where people feel like they can come to you and be themselves. It's really difficult to convey frustration, which a lot of students have, where if they showed up in my office and they're just like, I'm not getting it, and I just don't know what's wrong with me. Like, I can see that person's face, I can see their body, I can get up and, like, close the door so they have more privacy. Like, there's all kinds of stuff that I can do to just kind of shift the mood in the room. When it's through email, it's so much harder, and, like, I'm really good at it. I'm accurate about myself. I'm very, very good at communicating and writing with a lot of warmth. But I think the vast majority of online instructors are not. Yeah. Did I answer your question?
Yes, you did.
Okay, good.
100%. Yes, you did.
Okay, good.
So now that I knew her student demographics and how she creates meaningful connections with them, I asked Natalie about what a day in the life of an online teacher looks like, and how it might be different than a traditional classroom. It turns out that while there are significant differences, you still sometimes have to watch out for the students who want to talk about feminazis and white supremacy.
Yeah, it's just really complicated to build the course at the beginning, and you really have to have the thing completely built. The thing that a lot of people don't know is when they go to a traditional class, like, it was that old thing with the piano, I just have to stay one lesson ahead of the students. Like, literally, that's what I would do. I'd be like, I don't know what's happening next week. Flying by the seat of my pants. You can't do that with an online class. So your day in the life of teaching your online classes, like, honestly, I would get up at 6 a.m., check all my messages, put out any fires, and then I would dive into, like, the discussion areas and try and create some meaningful points there, and then start working through the grading. Because I never took a day off, because if I did, it wasn't just, like, my students might be unhappy, but it's like, I might come back and find the whole thing's on fire. Because every once in a while, too, you'd have somebody who, like, came in and they'd be like, I'm going to talk about white supremacy now. And you'd just be like, oh, holy shit, you know, like, you just come out there and you'd be like, nope, 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 nope. I had this guy who hated feminists. And so he wrote all this stuff about feminazis, all the feminazis and da 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 da. And I would just be like, okay, like, let's unpack the word feminazi. You know, let's talk about it. What's the history? You know, it's like, and so I could take it and be like, let's make something of it and not just delete you and block you and say that you're a bad person, but let's talk. We're in a college classroom. I totally had that happen live. Anyway, so you're never off. And the grading is killer. And what happens with instructors is they start to phone in the grading. And that's the absolute worst thing you can do, because it's the only time you really get the opportunity for personalized instruction. And it's the only time that you can make those feedback loops. They're so important. I would say to my students, like, I treat your words with honor. You wrote them for me to read. I'm not going to skim them. I'm not going to rush through it. I'm really going to read every word you write. Once you've taught a class a few times, you've worked out kind of all the little places that are rough, you really do just get to focus on the student. And that's why I loved it. Because once I'd done it a few times, I could be like, okay, discussions are solid, assignments are solid, samples are solid. I have all these videos I've created that I can just pop out and say, hey, students last year had this problem. Why don't you watch this video now so you don't have this problem? So then I just got to focus on the students and I could invest more in chats. At one point I had like 12 different chat names because I was just like, whatever platform you use, I will meet you on it and we will talk. So I think if I'm emphasizing anything, it's open communication and encouraging communication. It's not enough to be like, if you guys want, we can talk. So yeah, so once you got into it, it was really, really comfortable. The problem was too, your colleagues would be like, oh, teaching the online classes. I hope you get paid less for that, because they would feel like it was less work. And I'd just be like, it's like when you have a good kid and people are like, your kid's really easy, aren't they? It's like, I did the work up front, okay? Kids don't learn please and thank you for free. You gotta do that work up front. She didn't pop out of my womb with manners. I taught her that.
I feel like you just, like, addressed so many of the other questions in the other questions, so thank you.
I'm chatty.
Yeah. I feel like that comes with the territory of your job, you know, just addressing questions before they're asked.
Uh-huh. Anticipating.
Love it. My last question, where do you see online teaching going in the next 12 years?
So I know that California has this whole thing where they basically want to make it so that all freshmen and sophomore can take their GEs online. And I'm like, no, online college is awesome. And I've seen it be the right solution for a ton of people. But I would say for the 25% of my students for whom it was a good solution, for 75% of them it was actually destructive. Because it was not an environment where they were going to succeed. My whole thing is, like, we're always chasing happiness, right? And we think happiness comes from freedom. Freedom from a boss, freedom from deadlines, freedom from requirements from other people. But happiness really comes from interconnectedness. Like, think about the times when you're the most unhappy. It's always the time when you are feeling really isolated. And you're feeling like you don't have a place in your community. You don't have connections to people. Maybe you feel like the only time anyone contacts you is when they need something. You know, and that's a big thing is like, but we keep on thinking, well, then I'll be happier if I just cancel going out with those people. I'll feel happier if I can be my own boss. I'll feel happier if I don't actually have to go to a classroom and I can just be in my pajamas and log into this class. I'm going to be happier because I'll be more free. And that's not true at all. And it actually works really counterintuitively against one of the things that's so great about going to college, which is you are meeting people you wouldn't normally meet. You are making connections with people that you wouldn't naturally select. And also, you are networking with people who are at a level above you who can help you. And if we switch online and we're already weak in our interconnectedness, it's like putting you on an ice floe and pushing you out to sea because you're even more alone and you feel like you have even fewer resources and you're super confused and maybe mad because you feel like, well, I've got all this freedom. Why aren't I thriving? So anyway, so we have this whole idea that we're going to solve affordability and stuff by shoving more students into online classes. And, you know, I've been working with young people for a long, long time. I've been able to see culturally how things have changed with how we raise our young people. And most 18-year-olds, like especially new to college, they need to be in a classroom. They need to physically not be in their bedrooms. Like, it freaks me out because I'm looking at, too, there's this push for online K through 12, which I think has such great applications. So, like, my nephew is doing it. He's extremely bright. His parents cannot afford private school. And the schools in the area, they're really focused on these kids who are itinerant students, essentially. And so my sister-in-law is like, focus on those kids. You shouldn't have my son who's in there, who's like two grade levels ahead, who's like giving me more challenging math, when they're trying to make sure these kids have food and stuff like that. So she's picked online education. It's been great for them. But I get really freaked out because I keep on seeing my friends who are like, well, you know, my 11-year-old is having problems socially. I'm going to pull them out of school and put them into online school. And it's like, okay, you're going to make their problems so much worse. Education is not about consuming bits of knowledge. It's not, it, like, you can do that yourself. You don't need, you know, you don't need to go to online college to read a bunch of great books. That's not really the reason we go. The reason we go is to make connections, to learn a lot of soft skills. I see more people failing. I see that the blame is going to be put on systems. I see that a lot of private money is going to come flooding into these systems to say, we'll fix it, you know? I could see charter-style things trying to take over community colleges in California, which breaks my heart, and I would hate to see that because community college is the best bargain in the state of California. You know, I think there's going to be a lot of looking at how we deliver content and how we reach students without actually looking at kind of society as a whole and saying, is this good? Is this what we should be doing? Because there's money behind it. So if there's money behind it, people are going to do it. And I just think it's going to further this divide that we have in our country right now. I think so many things are good about it. I think there's going to be some great stuff that comes out of it. But I do think it's an inappropriate choice for a ton of people because as a society, we don't need more freedom from one another. We need more connection. So, doing my bows.
That was really great. You should do a podcast.
I think I should. That sounds good. Yeah.
So clearly this conversation went far beyond my original question of how one gets into online teaching and how it's different than a traditional classroom.
And clearly Natalie and I were both still thinking about her last points because she messaged me later that afternoon to say, "So the one thing I've been thinking about since we chatted is your last question. And the thing that I keep thinking about is that I'm certain online education is going to expand. But I think what will eventually happen is that we will use the prevalence of, but not the effectiveness of, online education to penalize those people who have traditionally not been part of higher education. And we will use it as a society as one more thing to sort of point at people to confirm the belief that people who are lower down on the socioeconomic ladder just do not want to improve their lives." I know, very pessimistic, but it's something that I'm really worried about. I am too. Music from this episode was provided by the YouTube Audio Library by artists Anno Domini Beats and Chris Zabriskie. Special thanks to Natalie Chenault-Dougal for her time and for responding to a random post on Facebook asking to interview an online teacher.